Okay, here we go. Okay, we have two parshios this week, Acharei Mos and Kedoshim, right? And they are a continuation of the topics of Kedusha, Tumah and Taharah, things we started speaking about last week. And we explained last week that after Nadav and Avihu did something, in other words, contributed, voluntarily decided to go, you know, to offer really a carbon or to go beyond the specific protocol of the rules of the Mishkan, they didn't survive the experience. And we compared this to entering into a, like a nuclear facility where the where there's, you know, a person must be so cautious not to be exposed, let's say, to the radiation. And therefore, there are endless warnings and signs and protocols, and there's endless, specific details in terms of what you have to wear and where you can step and what you can't wear and what you can't bring in and what you can't have on you, because it is a very dangerous situation. You're entering into a place of enormous power that is much, much greater than yourself. And if you don't approach it with an awareness of what it is, not what you are, then you won't survive the experience. So then the Torah goes into a parshios about Tumah and Taharah, about how to enter the Mishkan, under what conditions. And we spoke last week about the different types of Tumah and Taharah that affect a person either because they come in contact with something outside of themselves or the Tumah comes from within themselves. Now, in addition to that, Acharei Mos and Kedoshim continue with laws about how to enter the Mishkan safely. Talk about Yom Kippur, how to enter not just the Mishkan, but the holiest portion of the Mishkan, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then we shift a little bit and we start discussing the concept of Kedusha in terms of our general approach to life. How we have to behave not in consideration of coming into the Mishkan. And this section really begins in Parshas Acharei Mos, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Gimel, where the Torah, after discussing the rules of entering the Mishkan, says, now, in general, Kimaseh Eretz Mitzrayim, like the behavior, like the deeds of Eretz Mitzrayim, that you dwelled there, do not copy them. Don't do that. Ukimasa, and like the deeds of Eretz Canaan that I'm about to take you to, don't imitate those things. Okay? And the Torah reminds us, don't be even like those countries you lived in that were steeped in Tumah and lack of Kedusha. Rather, conduct yourselves in your day-to-day life on a different level. And the Torah then goes into lots of laws about sexual purity. As soon, because these places were known for their lack of restraint in this area. Just read some books about ancient paganistic culture, especially the Canaanites. There was no restraint in this area. Then when the Torah finishes with that, we come to Parshas Kedoshim, and there's a general statement, which is a mitzvah in and of itself. And, here we go, the purpose of all the other mitzvahs. This is the tachlis of everything else. This is the purpose of all the other mitzvahs. Kedoshim to you, you shall be kadosh. And it's a very strange pasuk, and our job today is going to be to analyze this focus, this emphasis on our kedusha, and it's not more than an obligation to be kadosh. What is kadosh? And how the Torah frames our really inevitable connection to kedusha. So the Torah says, Kedoshim to you, you shall be Kadosh, because I, Hashem, am Kadosh. Now, how do you read that pasuk? It's a command, Kedoshim to you. It's a command, it's a mitzvah. You shall be, a directive. And the reason you shall be, and Hashem very often, very rarely does this, tells us why we have to do a mitzvah, okay? And certainly never really ever says, you should do it because that's like me. And Hashem never really describes himself. It's not a common thing. It says, you shall be Kadosh because I am Kadosh. And so on the one hand, you could read it as a command, you must be because I am, which in and of itself is very complimentary because it means I expect you to be like me. But we're going to take it today from this perspective, which is in addition to the, in a sense, obligation to be kadosh, but we're going to take it, as Chazal explained, as a promise, as a guarantee. Most of our ideas today, by the way, come from Rav Gedalia Shor, or Gedaliahu, on the Parsha. As a guarantee, kadoshim tihiyu, you will inevitably become kadosh, which means, Rashi tells us, mufrash, separated, designated exclusively for a single goal, a single destination, a single purpose, to the exclusion of all others. That is what Kedusha means, simply. Mufrash, separated from everything else, devoted to one specific cause, to the exclusion of everything else. Because I, Hashem, am Kedush, it is inevitable that since you, this is what really is the underlying premise here, are like me, and I am Kadosh, you inevitably are going to end up somehow becoming Kadosh. It's a guarantee. Now, it doesn't happen automatically. Hashem plays a role in this, in putting within us forces that will push us to be Kadosh, to be designated for a certain and specific end and purpose. And then we have to recognize those forces in us and utilize them correctly, which is what we've been speaking about in the last few weeks. So first of all, in terms of being mufresh, one of the classic usages of the word kedusha that develops, you know, that kind of proves this idea that this is what it means, is under a chuppah, what do we say? Aharei at mikudeshes li, which means you are exclusively now designated to me, to the exclusion of all else. But we have learned here, just in developing the issue, that to the exclusion of all else does not mean that we exclude engaging in anything else. It means that anything else we engage in is only to help build and promote this single agenda. Remember, we talked about the counting of the sphera. It's not that when we devote ourselves to one thing, we become utterly narrow and we have no thoughts other than the small amount we know about this thing, which in this case is to be kadosh, to be like Hashem, and therefore we limit ourselves. It doesn't mean limitation at all, as Hashem is Ein Sof, not limited. So too it means that everything else we engage in, everything else we talk about, think about, put our efforts into, try to acquire, try to achieve, everything else we do and spend our energies on is all devoted to this one specific goal, to the exclusion of everything else. In other words, it's honing in, consolidating versus letting ourselves be scattered. Now, the idea of Kedoshim to you, we're going to start with the philosophy and we're going to work backwards to the strategies, to the practical strategies. The philosophy, which we've been talking about in many different ways here, is that it is inevitable that a person will be Kadosh because Hashem is Kadosh, and that is based on the assumption, the underlying axiom, that we are like Hashem. Right now, we talked about this, but we're going to go to the proof. The Zohar says, and this is brought down by the Baal HaTanya, which we began to quote last week, about the Nefesh Helokis, the God-like soul in every person. He explains here that a person is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that concept is already hinted to in the words of the Chumash, back in Perek Beis, Pasuk Vav, when it says there that Hashem formed man, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim Es HaAdam, Afar Min HaAdama, dirt of the earth, and then the next words are, Vayipach Ba'apo Nishmas Chayim. Anyone who's into yoga is going to like this a little bit. He blew into his nose the neshama of life. Now, the Zohar says on the following, on that statement, Mon denafach, from where did he blow this breath? Misoche nafach, from within himself he blew it. Now, what is that trying to say? So, explains here, this Perush here, that, you know, there are two types of breath. There's the natural breath that comes out like when a person is speaking, or breathing involuntarily, that's kind of like from the mouth. It obviously originates in the lungs, but it doesn't take an effort to exhale that breath. It just naturally comes out as you talk and as you breathe. But then there's the breath that takes effort, that you have to draw up from within yourself, from deep inside of you, and you have to exhale it, and it's a deeper type of an exhale. there's an exhale, you know, that you just blow from your mouth and happens to be a cool breath, and an exhale that comes from deep in the core, and it's a hot breath, first of all, and it takes effort to pull it out. And the deeper you exhale, you actually feel the effort inside of you. So they're saying, where did Hashem get his breath from? They're distinguishing. It wasn't the breath of speech. It was a breath that was much more primary. It was the breath of the inside. In other words, the ratzon, the will of a Kadosh Baruch. In other words, it's not what Hashem created in a way that's outside of himself. It's what Hashem brought into existence that is from within himself. What that's trying to say, and this becomes a very tricky topic, and this is definitely in the Kabbalistic realm, that we are not miniature gods, obviously, in a physical sense. Obviously. Nothing physical contains Hashem. That is really also the definition of Kadosh. Mufrash. Transcendent, not contained in the physical world. Okay? But at the same time, the forces that we associate with Hashem are the very same forces that we recognize, if we think a little bit, that are driving us. Right? So in terms of this very important but subtle nuance of Hashem being like the source of who we are, but not being contained by ourselves or anything physical, here's a mashal. Hashem is called Mikomo Shel Olam, the place that the whole Bria, the whole creation, exists within. But Chazal say, Hashem is Mikomo Shel Olam, the place of the world, but Ein HaOlam Mikomo, but this world is not his place. So, what's the mashal? Think about the fetus and the mother, right? Would it be true to say the mother is the makom of the fetus? For sure. The fetus exists in the makom that is the mother, the place that is the mother. And the mother is the source of the beating heart and the respiration, which isn't quite oxygen yet through, you know, from outside. And it keeps the baby warm and transports the baby from place to place and supplies all the nutrients. The mother is animating, giving life to the baby, and is the makom that the fetus exists within. But it would also be true to say the fetus does not contain the mother, right? So we say Hashem is makomo shel olam, the place that we exist within, and Hashem animates everything within us personally, even the forces of human nature that drive us, what we care about, what we want, what makes us feel satisfied. And at the same time, we do not contain, nothing physical contains HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? Now, because the Zohar says, and it's a fundamental, it's an axiom, that we are coming from the deepest core, so to speak, ratzon, will of Hashem, and therefore we are similar to the nature that we would associate with Hashem. And that explains why. When we understand this and we key into it and we utilize those forces, which are godlike forces, and express them in the correct ways, we feel a deep sense of satisfaction, which in Hebrew has a word, the tam of something, the taste. In other words, the joy and the pleasure and the satisfaction of something. That is when a person can attach to what already exists within them, which is their likeness to Hashem, and correctly utilize it, right? So this sounds a little familiar. We've been speaking about this. So just for a few minutes to review what we're saying, okay? Well, what we're saying is that unlike how it's often framed in conversations of, you know, why did Hashem give us the Yetzer Hara? Why did Hashem make a pig and tell us not to eat it? Why did Hashem give us temptation and tell us not to indulge them? Like, what kind of game is this? Why create things that we want to indulge in and then forbid us from indulging in them? What's the point? So some people answer the following, and it's an answer that's not satisfying. Hashem created the Yetzer Hara so that we should overcome it and earn schar. But it's got to be more than that. It's got to be something much more fundamental. What we're saying here, based on this idea that Hashem blew from with, in a sense, from within, so to speak, his own essence, we're saying is this. By virtue of the fact that we have godlike forces driving us inside, we face a danger. This is the danger of life. that we can imagine that all of those desires and forces that drive us are there to promote exclusively ourselves, and we forget they're there to help us become, recognize our connection to, our similarity to, and ultimately our eternal bond that we can create between ourselves and Hashem. That's the difference. The Torah was started with a beis. Now, Aseres HaDibros begin with a aleph. From beis to aleph, what's that word?
Bow.
Bow, coming. It's approaching. It's coming. We start, this world, the nature of this world is the beis. The real essence of the beis is that the very same forces that exist in every single person, and the Jewish people are more attuned to them because we've been thinking about them and talking about them and working with them forever. So these forces that are in a person, in every person, the biggest rush is trying to manage these forces, and the biggest tzaddik is trying to manage these forces. What distinguishes between them is how they manage them, how they recognize and understand them. The big challenge is to make sure that shift, that the possibility of using all of this for ourselves and then being separated from Hashem doesn't happen. Rather, when we recognize that the forces within us help us understand that we are like, and here we get back to Kedoshim, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we begin to want to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu more and be more and more in awe of Hashem's greatness, because that means that we could be equally great. And then that, what we're really saying there is, as Chazal say it, we put the crown not on our own heads. There's a crown out there. Hashem, so to speak, created the world, and there's a crown that has to be put on someone's head. The beis is the possibility between putting that crown on our own heads and taking that crown and putting it on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head, which in a sense is putting it on our own heads. And that's what it says in the end of the parsha, V'his kadashtem, you shall make yourself kadosh, and you will be kadosh by making HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be recognizing Hashem as more and more, greater and greater, more awesome, we become aware of our greater and greater potential. So, Rav Gedalia Shor brings down here that when it says kadoshim to you, so you shall be kadosh because I am kadosh. So Chazal asks, a person might say, like Hashem himself. Hashem says, yachol kamoni, like me. He says, no, my kadusha is above your kadusha. That's not an insult. That's trying to say, as kadosh as you get, there's always the next level. There's an ein sof. As the more you recognize Hashem's greatness, the more you recognize your ability to progress even further. There is no end. Now, when Chazal also say that, here, let's quote it inside, that Medrash Rabbah, we talked about the crown. Mashal b'nei Medina, this is a mashal, that there's people in a province, she'asu gimel ataras lamelech, they made three crowns for the king, v'chule, etc. Nasan barosho echad, he took one and put it on his head, ushtayim barosham shalbanov, and two he put on his son's head. Kach b'chol yom v'yom, so too every single day, the higher spheres, whatever that means, machtirin l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu gimel kedushas, the higher spheres attribute to God three degrees of kedusha, as we say in kedusha, kadosh, 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 right? Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu oseh, what does Hashem do? Nosein barosho echad v'shtayim baroshon shalishol, he puts one crown on his head, and two crowns on the head of Klaishol. What crown is Hashem putting on his head? And what crown is he putting on the heads of Klai Yisrael? So, not to get very Kabbalistic, but anyone who's looked a little bit, introduced themselves a little bit into the concept of the forces, so to speak, that operate in this world, which are called the spheros, recognize that they are, there's a chart, and there's 10. And the topmost sphera of all the spheros, in other words, the topmost force that drives this world, okay, is called Keser, the crown. And Keser refers to the incomprehensible, totally kadosh, mufrash, transcendent, beyond our comprehension, that we have no ability to really, you know, get a true glimpse of or grasp HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence, pre-existence of everything, existence after everything, the deep will of Hashem, the perfection of Hashem, Hashem's governing of the world. This is all beyond us. It exists. It's a reality. And it's referred to as Keser, the ultimate highest crown. Okay? Then, underneath that ultimate crown, which is our recognition of something so much greater than us that drives us and inspires us to know that there's more to us than our physical existence. And at a certain point, a person wants to devote themselves to something greater than themselves, something more eternal, something more perfect. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know it's there. Then the next portion of the, so to speak, chart or arrangement of these forces, they're different forces. We know them as Chesed, Chachma, Bina, Das, Chesed, Gevura, Teferes, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. And at the bottom, the very bottom, parallel to the crown on top, is called Malchus. Malchus refers to Hashem's interaction in our world. So when we speak about Malchus, what we're really speaking about is it's associated with a term we know a little bit better, which is the term Gevura, Hashem's Gevura. For example, in Atah Gibor, in the Bracha Atah Gibor in Shmona Esrei, we speak about Hashem giving life, sustaining life, you know, helping us win battles. We talk about human achievement, the Gevuras of Hashem. The powerful aspects of Hashem is how Hashem involves himself in this world. We also have a name for it. The name for this is Malchus. It's the point of interaction between HaKadosh Baruch Hu guiding history, setting up opportunities, giving people potential, giving them insight, helping them achieve, driving the world forward. We have a name for it. It's called Malchus. And Melech also wears a crown. So what we're saying is, from the point of the incomprehensible place, where, so to speak, of Hashem's domain, to the human being's day-to-day effort, both are represented by kingship or crowns, and the human being, by fulfilling their role, knowing what they're supposed to be doing here, in a sense, is offering Hashem crowns, and Hashem puts one on his head, that's called Keser, which means we recognize that the Hashem's, you know, incomprehensible existence, and we recognize, but Hashem putting that one crown back on us, that our role is an extension of that, a complete extension of that. The other crown, he says here, is the crown of Nitzchias, of eternity. Hashem gives us that crown when we say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. So what that's trying to say is this, as we said last time, some of the forces that operate within us, that make us, if we recognize them, realize that it's not a simple kind of like game of, I gave you Yetzer Hara, so you should overcome it, so I should give you Schar. Rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu invested in this world forces, in nature and in human nature, in the way our minds work, the way our hearts work, the way we are physically driven. Hashem invested forces in nature that let us know that we are just like Hashem, that we come from within, so to speak. What are some of these forces? We spoke about them, just to review. Every person wants to make sure, is always trying to secure for themselves the guarantee, the assurance, that in the eyes of people, they are recognized as having worth, kavod, right? Ura kavodi, the word kavod is a euphemism for my nefesh, my soul. Awake my soul. A person knows that they must matter, be relevant, not be extraneous, disposable, you know, of no worth at all. A person intuitively must feel that they are acknowledged. And David HaMelech, for example, who did not get that acknowledgement really from anybody or from very few people, found it in his trust that Hashem acknowledged him. That's why he's a symbol for so many people that don't have worth in the eyes of other people. He had, believe it or not, think of it, if you look at David Mel's life, he was condemned by a lot of people. He was considered worthless. He was considered a failure. He was abandoned and rejected by all the people that should have valued him. That's what he really lived through. And he found his solace in Hashem's, you know, believing in him, so to speak. But the first thing is, a person must have a feeling of self-worth. And why is it so fundamental to us? That if we don't have it, we cannot live. If somebody tells us you're worthless, we will not accept that message. There'll be a few reactions. One might be rage and hatred, which you see in whole cultures today, because they're basically getting the message that they're worthless. Nobody created them. They're not worth anyone putting effort into. Their own parents abandon them. They abuse them and neglect them, and they don't care about their humanity and their dignity. They treat them like dirt, and the whole culture is treated like that, and the response is rage and hatred. It either turns against the one giving the message, it turns inward and hits in depression and misery and sadness and suicide and all that. And Ramesh Shapira says that he heard from someone who heard from the Alter of Slobodka this, and the Alter of Slobodka was a huge psychological genius before Freud and very intuitive psychologically, and he was known for that. He said that when the person really considers the possibility that there is zero, the mind kicks in with delusions of grandeur to protect the person, because otherwise they would just die. They couldn't live. They would have to lose their life. It's not. So that comes from the fact that a person is like Hashem, who is Echad and Miyuchad, one and only, worthy of being worshipped. We would say worthy of being taken into consideration, right? And that knowledge that drives us is often the cause of almost everything we do. Just trying to secure for ourselves, we call it ego, but it's not a bad thing. A sense of self-worth, because that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is one and only and worthy of being worshipped and needed and necessary and unique. And we need to feel that about ourselves too. And that is the source of what we call, if it's misused, gaiva. And make no mistake about it, a timid person is just as afflicted by gaiva as a very arrogant person, because if a person wants to assure that they are, you know, that they are respected and worthy, some people aggressively kind of impose that information on others. I'm the smartest, I'm the prettiest, I'm the richest, I'm the biggest balas chesed, I'm the whatever it is, right? So I must be known for that, because that gives me a guarantee that I'm something like Hashem, that I must, that, and that my existence is necessary and permanent, right? That's another thing, nitzchi. The other people that are very timid are doing the same thing. I won't speak up because maybe I'll be wrong. I won't impose myself because maybe someone won't like me and won't think I'm worthy. I'm not going to push myself because maybe then somebody will reject me and I won't have a sense of worth. It's coming from the same place, just different natures. So the not knowing what to do with that feeling leads to gaiva. It leads to excessive timidity or humility or passiveness. The right way to utilize that is to recognize that the force that drives us is kavod, but kavod in other people's eyes is not the solution, because that only lasts for 5 seconds. Then we need kavod in another person's eyes to assure ourselves that we are echad u'miyuchad. But kavod in Hashem's eyes, that's for real. Now, in under this heading of kavod or being worthy comes many things. So I have to be like all the qualities of Hashem. Hashem is MS. I must be, see, that what I say makes sense and it's true. And if somebody says, you don't know what you're talking about, I could kill that person, right? I go to battle. I also must defend myself that I'm always good, because Hashem is Tov. So everything I do is good. And if you don't see the reason I did it was for the good, that's your problem. And don't assume that I did it for negative reasons or ulterior motives. And we get very offended. And it's all altruistic and it's all very perfect and it's all very pure. And we also want to, like Hashem is Kone Hakol, owns everything, the source and the master of everything and deserves everything and can have everything. We want to have everything. And if something's haveable, we don't know why we shouldn't have it. We insist on having it. But there's two things I want to focus on now that are basic, you know, human drives, and that is the drive to be immortal, Nitzchi. That's one of the crowns that Hashem does put on our head if we recognize Hashem's Kedusha and recognize that we're a continuum of it. Nitzchius, people are driven by the desire to be more than just temporary. Nobody wants to view themselves as, I came and I went and it was, and then it's gone and it didn't really matter and who cared? Like, you know, like any dead, you know, puppy or God forbid or, you know, or ant. And they came and they went, so who cares? Everybody wants to make sure that their existence here is remembered, that they made a difference, that there's something that lives on after them. So there are statues and monuments and legacies and children. And by the way, this is the core of why parents want their kids, to the very strong, terrible detriment of their kids, to be just like them, because that's their continuation, their immortality, as opposed to the child being their own person. By the way, just a little caveat here. My grandfather writes, back a few parshas, that in Mishpatim, that you see three halachas in a row. The first one says, Maka aviv imo mosumas, if you hit chas v'shalom, wound a parent, you condemn to death. The next mitzvah says, Gonev ish umachro mosumas, if you steal somebody, kidnap somebody and sell them. In other words, you treat them as your property, then mosumas, you're put to death. And the third one says, makalul aviv imo mosumas. If you curse your parents, you shall be put to death. So my grandfather asked the question, why is kidnapping someone in between wounding and cursing your parents? And his answer is, if you treat your child like a kidnapped prisoner, subject to your will and what's good for you, they will either want to kill you or curse you. That's the road to disaster. Right. So, and that means not in the formative years, he says by 20, when the person's an adult, when a person's chayv ben adam lemakom by themselves. But in other words, that's part of the reason why parents have certain, you know, their status is wrapped up in the kid, or their future is wrapped up in the kid's image. So all of this is all coming from one very, very good place. So nitzchius is a drive we have, and it comes out in negative ways. The proper way to express our yearning for nitzchius is recognize kadoshim to you. Hashem is nitzchi, forever. And we have the same forces in us that come directly from Hashem's qualities. And therefore, if we are attached to the mitzvahs of Hashem, and we perform them out of love for our true nature, that's who we are nitzri, we become nitzri. Hashem puts the crown, we say kadosh, 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 those three crowns, so to speak, three recognitions of truth and perfection, that's, so to speak, grandeur. And Hashem gives that right back to us, that we become nitzri. In the recognition of Hashem's greatness, which is constantly increasing in a person the more they learn, is the recognition of the person's own greatness and potential. And it comes back on their own heads. And the other thing that drives us, among all of these things, is to, as we said, to be worthy, to be right, to be true, to be eternal, to have everything, okay? To be eternal is to be chai, v'kayam, to exist, to have permanence. One of the other forces that drive us, of course, is chesed, altruism, love, giving, and another force, and it gives a person deep satisfaction because it's like Hashem. And the other force that drives a person that sits parallel is restraint and self-control, which gives a person great satisfaction because it's also, the combination of both are also godlike. Those are Hashem's midos. What Hashem does and where Hashem holds back. Remember, we spoke about the gevur of Hashem. The mashal is atomic energy. We take the atomic, if we release the atomic energy in this one half an inch of this piece of plastic at the end of these glasses, okay, we could destroy New Jersey or New York. I mean, the atomic energy withheld inside every atom, when it's broken, when the atom is broken apart and the energy is released, nobody can survive it. Now that's a mashal for Hashem's gevura, all that energy held back in matter, so we can use it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu also holds back and restrains his real nature, which is to be everything, be seen as everything, you know, be the force of that's clearly recognized of everything, so that people can have what we call bechira, free choice. So we have here like this, a person, we say kadosh three times, and the three times represents these three crowns. And by the way, this is the secret to what we say in what's called kedusha de sidra, which is the kedusha that Targum Yonason explains, and we say it on Shabbos afternoon in Ubalatzion. So actually, I need to sit here for one second. Here I have. So you know these words. These are the three explanations of the three crowns, so to speak, the three aspects of Kedusha. So here's what it is. We say like this in Balatzion. We say Ata Kadosh Yesh Yoshev Tehilos Yisrael. You are Kadosh Mufrash, elevated. You are sitting upon. You are enthroned upon our recognition, our Tehila, our praise. V'Korazel Zevamar, the Malachim, the forces that are in charge of the world, really, that explain the Malachim, or the forces that Hashem created in this world. They call Karazel Zeva Amar, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. We know this, right? Now we're going to explain it piece by piece. Kadosh Hashem Tzvakos. Hashem is Kadosh, the king of all the legions, of everything. But at the same time, Molo Kol Haaretz Kavodo, the whole world is filled with his kavod. That's the mashal of the fetus and the mother. Hashem is Kadosh, 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 Mufrash, separated, separated, separated. But at the same time, Malo kol ha'aretz kavodo. This whole world is filled with the obvious expression of Hashem's life force, which means this world is animated by Hashem, and our recognition of that is kavod, is honor, recognition. So the world is filled with his kavod, his glory, the force that drives the world that doesn't contain the world. By the way, a side point. One of the premier, but not of our thinking, philosophers from the Jews was Spinoza. And this was the kfira, the heresy was in this point. He saw that this world, all of nature, the rules of nature, as being the sum total definition of God's abilities. In other words, this world is God, so to speak. God is, so to speak, contained within his works, which is another way of saying that, and we don't accept this at all, that what we see is the sum total of God's powers. But that is not at all true. Just because somebody builds Versailles, that doesn't mean that that's the only thing they can do. It just means that for the necessity of that purpose, that's what they built. But maybe they could build other things for other purposes. This world is not the sum total definition of Hashem's powers. There's a big, big diversion from what we believe in. It's called, by the way, pantheism. And Spinoza was from Amsterdam. Lahavdil, the Ramchal spent time in Amsterdam, and he said the exact opposite, which is that this world is an expression of the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it doesn't contain God. It explains the potential in this world to elevate, especially human beings themselves, more and more and more without limit, that there is no limit, and to be closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In any case, we go on here, and he explains like this. Three Kedushas. Kedusha number one. Kaddish b'shmei Meroma ilah b'shechinte. He's Kadosh in the highest realms, in the place, the house of his Shechina. This is the crown, so to speak, that Hashem places on himself, which is what we call Keser, which is Keser Malchus. We put the two terms together. Hashem's Keser, which means our recognition of the incomprehensibility of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for our minds to grasp. But the amazing thing about this is that we have the capacity to become close to, connected to, eternal, like, to be joined up with this. Okay? That's the first Keser. Now, the other two Kedushas are going to be the two Kesers, crowns, that Hashem, so to speak, bestows back upon us, that we wear. Same exact crown that we're wearing and Hashem is wearing. That's what's so surprising. We look in the mirror and recognize that we are wearing the same crown, that we have the drives in us that are from Hashem directly, and it's just a matter of managing them, which, by the way, let's just clarify this. As opposed to Hashem gave us a Yetzer Hara, so we should overcome it, so we should get Schar, we're saying it differently. We're saying Hashem created us with his own qualities, which by definition are going to pose a challenge because we might use them for our own purposes. That's the Beis instead of the Aleph. And then we'll be very separated from Hashem. We'll be dead. That's what it really means in the Eitz Hadas, Mos Yumos. You're going to die if you become by Yisuk Elohim. You're going to think you're God. The challenge is to recognize that these qualities are what, if we use them correctly, investing in them our intellect to tell us what to do with these forces, they help us become close to Hashem, eternal. We really are, we really could achieve these qualities of being emes, of being tov, of being chesed, of having gevurah, all Hashem's qualities, and being nitzri, eternal, and being chai v'kayim, really existent, and being echad. We really could achieve them if we understand how to use the forces correctly and not to relate to them and react to them, you know, as if they were something that we needed right now for our own purposes versus forces that help us understand our connection to Hashem. So the first one is that Keser. Here are the next two. Kaddish al Ara Ovad Gevurte. Hashem is Kadosh in this world through his Gevura. Gevura, as we said, is, like we say in the Bracha of Ata Gibor and Shmona Esrei, the interaction, the union between Hashem and people, in other words, the human forces and abilities that help us achieve in this world, that Hashem gives the potential for life, we enhance it. Hashem, right, he gives the potential for crops to grow, but we make the bread. Hashem gives us chemicals and herbs, and we make the medicines, etc. All the things we do, that is Hashem, recognition of Hashem in this world, and our utilization of this world for those purposes. That's called Gevura, and that crown is on our head. We do that. And the third Kedusha is which one? La'olam olmei omaya. That is forever and all the worlds are. That is Nitzchius, eternity. That Keser, that crown, is also on our heads. And we achieve that by bestowing it on Hashem. In other words, what we're saying is opposite the fact that, in opposed to saying, Hashem is so incomprehensible and so great and so perfect, and therefore I'm a nothing little creature that has no hope, and I'm a human being, and, you know, like Christians say, Lahavdil, the heart is willing but the flesh is weak, and what can I do? And I'm condemned by my human animal nature, etc. That this is saying kadoshim to you, you will become kadosh because I am kadosh, and you're going to feel that in yourself. And at a certain point, a person does become a little disgusted, you might say, with reacting to every situation based on what my ego needs right now to make me feel that I'm right, I'm good, I'm secure, I'm permanent, I matter. Because each time a person does that, it lasts 3 seconds. And at a certain point, a person says, what's going to really make me feel all these things? And these are the only things that give me satisfaction, that give me a tam. Now, here's the thing. Let's go back into strategies. So the Gedalia Yishur says the following, he brings from the Sfasemis. Kim Masa Mitzrayim, like the deeds of Mitzrayim, and like the deeds of Canaan, do not copy them. Rather, this extends to be kadosh. Be different. Devote those forces. Don't let them express themselves in a free-for-all, but devote those forces to really what they're there for. Now, he says like this. He says that the way it works is that when a person allows themselves to transgress or overstep minor so-called red lines or violations, then that will inevitably be a cumulative effect, and then they'll violate the big things. So it doesn't say kadesh. Ramban tells us, Kadesh, Kadoshim to you, be Kadosh. He says, Kadesh Atzmacha b'mutar lach. Start with, forget about all the things that are Usur. How do you start? You start with knowing what's Usur, and then in reverence for what's Usur, you back off and you're even Kadosh, Mufrash. You separate yourself from either things that are Mutar. For example, it's Usur, for example, to, kill somebody. That's an obvious example, right? So knowing that it's usher to kill someone, you don't have a loaded gun in your house because you're scared that, God forbid, an accident can happen. So out of a recognition of the red line, we take upon ourselves precautions so that we don't transgress. That, because if we transgress all the little lines, inevitably the mistake is going to happen. There'll be that tipping point, the straw that broke the camel's back, then the big thing. It's going to be the natural cumulative effect. Here's the problem. When we try to teach and convey to people the necessity of being kadosh, there's a way that destroys what we're trying to achieve, and there's a way that builds it. The way to build it is to let people know what the red lines are, and then they themselves are cautious not to approach them. The wrong way is to make it seem that every minor line that's really a cautionary protection is the ultimate red line. So if you cross that little one, you're done. You're finished and you have made the biggest, and you're lost. Then the person feels there's no difference between, you know, the little red line and the big red line, right? Then the person becomes overcome by all the endless imposed rules that they did not cultivate out of concern for the final red line. In other words, this happens a lot, unfortunately, let's say, with how people are taught. I get this also, people, you know, with, like, in terms of tznius, let's say. If every little teensy thing becomes a red line that you can't cross, it becomes oppressive. And then, well, if I'm already crossing this little red line and putting a back pocket on my skirt, I might as well just wear, you know, shorts and a halter. What's the difference? In other words, not knowing what the real red line is and seeing every little, you know, detail or sensitivity as the red line is doing a terrible disservice to people because they don't want any of it. So the way we start is the real thing, and then we back off. Now, this is where a person introduces what is their own interest, in other words, their own sensitivity. And here's what he says, which is very, very fundamental. And he brings a pasuk again from this week's parsha, which is huge. And that is this. He brings the cup pasuk that brings the pasuk like this. One second here. Where is it? 1 minute. All right, I wrote it here. He brings the pasuk that, okay, here. In Achrimos, Perek Yudches, pasuk Hey, Hashem says, my mishpatim, es mishpatai, go turn to it, Yudches, pasuk Hey, 18:5, es mishpatai, my rules, asher yase osam ha'adam, that the person should do them, v'chai bahem, and live by them, ani Hashem. Rashi says, live by them, obviously beyond this world in Olam Haba. Here the Ramban says that chai bahem, live by them, implies that every single person, according to what they invest and their care and their appreciation of the Kedusha of Hashem, which means their own ability, they invest into their life and live in a world, in a zone, according to their own appreciation of what's happening here. The objective is to cultivate in people a sense of the similarity between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which drives them then to develop for themselves, and their life becomes defined by a greater sensitivity to not just what is forbidden, but what is permitted, and their own, you know, adaptations, really, that bring them more and more constantly in tune in every area of their life to the single-minded objective, as we said in the beginning. One exclusive cause that we're devoted to the exclusion of all others, which doesn't mean excluding ourselves from everything, but including everything in that direction, that as soon as a person keeps their eye on that, every other thing they become sensitive to, does it lead towards or away from? Is it about putting the crown on my head or putting the crown on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head? Everything becomes evaluated from this perspective. Every little thing becomes a value. A person develops self-awareness. Why did I say that? Why did I have that reaction? Why do I want this? Is it because I feel a drive to be important, and therefore right now, right here, this makes me feel important? That's why I wanted it. That's why I had such a severe reaction, positive or negative, because I'm putting the crown on my head. Or putting the crown on Kadosh Baruch Hu's head means I want to feel, you know, worthy, but I mean worthy in Hashem's eyes. So who cares about my reactions to whether this person said or if, you know. Every single one, the main idea here is that every one of these forces that already exist in us, they are godlike forces. We have a word for this. The Ramchal, who basically introduced this whole new way of thinking, really his yichidish is the idea that the human being has to see themselves, and this is the only tachlis, really. This is the point of it all. This is the goal. This is what he calls havana nechona b'metziyot, a true understanding of the reality. That they are what is called tzura sa'adam. We've used that term before. Tzura means the form of what is in Adam. In Adam, that Hashem created, is a tzelem elokim. A human being's tzura, what a person makes out of themselves, what defines them, their contours, spiritually their contours, right? They are like HaKadosh Baruch himself. The point here is recognizing the infinite potential in a person. The person's recognition of that elevates Hashem in their eyes, which elevates themselves in their own eyes, which helps them almost more naturally not fight the Yetzer Hara, but want only one real expression of themselves, helping them consolidate all these other drives, recognize where they come from, and then use them correctly to make out of themselves a Tzelem Elokim. So that it's our greatness that is really the dangerous place that could be misused. And I just want to end with this idea by Yisbnei Shol, and they came out of Mitzrayim. And it says, Vayisu Mirfidim, they traveled away from Rafidim, right? And right after that, you know, Vayavo Amalek, right? But before Amalek came, Bnei Shol said something. Anybody remember what they said? Hayesh Hashem bekirbeinu ayin. Is God with us or not? And Chazal say on there, what do you mean, is God with us? Because I'm with you, that's why you sinned. because I am bikirbeinu, I am bikirbecha within you, because I am the one driving you and making you want to be powerful and control everything and know everything and be secure and be permanent and be all those things. That's why you sin, because you misuse those forces. So the great gift is the source of the great struggle and the great conflict. But if we see what the gift is there for clearly, and we experience a dissatisfaction of misusing it, it never works. Using it all for ourselves, it's fine. It lasts a second. Then slowly, Hashem says, Kedoshim to you, don't worry, you'll get there. You will start to devote yourself to something greater than yourself and recognize that's what you really want, because that's already in you. I guarantee it. It's a haftacha. Kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. Yeah.
Yetzer lev
hadam ra minu urav.
So where does that
stem? It stems here. I would say that my grandfather had a very nice piece about it. It's very good. Deborah is asking a very good question. After the mabul, Hashem says, I'm no longer going to destroy the world with a mabul. Ki yetzer lev hadam ra minu urav. The natural tendencies of a person's heart or will, desire, is ra, bad, from his youth. My grandfather has a very beautiful understanding of this, just like his very insightful understanding of Makalel, cursing and hitting. He says, notice this, in a child, it fits right into what we're saying, in a child whose intellect has not really developed yet, feels those same forces. They want everything. They want it their way. They don't really appreciate or not interested in anybody else's opinion. That goes well into teenage years, obviously, until the brain grows in, as they say. And I'll never forget when I had the two boys. So my Mordechai, or he should live and be well, was about 2 or 3, and Naftali was about, I guess, 5 or 6. I remember there were these big, those disgusting cicadas that climb out of their skin and leave their whole exoskeleton behind, the whole thing. So he picked one up, my little 2-year-old, and he looks at it, and he goes, and he puts it in his mouth. So my other son is looking at him he goes, Ma, did his brains grow in yet? So when a person is a child, and they react only on the basis of, I want it now because that makes me feel, that it's satisfying my interest and I'm right and you don't know what you're talking about and it has to be my way and don't contradict me. So that's youthful, misuse of the godlike tendencies. What's supposed to happen is, as our intellect grows, we begin to realize that, hey, we can't always be right. And maybe there's a lot of people out there and everybody thinks they're right. So maybe in the pursuit of real truth, I'll hear someone else's opinion. And by the way, a machlokas l'shem shemayim, my grandfather says, is a machlokas where both sides totally trust and are sure that the other side is l'shem shemayim. So it's a real pursuit of truth, not just they bashing each other with, over the head, who can bash stronger, with whose idea wins. It's really a pursuit of the person wants to know that they're MS, they're right, like Hashem is MS. So we really try to know what the MS is. That's called the machlokas l'shem shemayim, as opposed to being infuriated that someone doesn't think we're right and defending our position, even if it's wrong. Those are the two ways to use that force. So what's supposed to happen is the intellect grows and moderates the person's natural godlike tendencies and teaches them how to use them correctly. But what he's saying there is Hashem sees that without effort, it always means without effort, a person will stay like a child, like he was in his youth. Ra min urav will stay undeveloped, going nowhere, which is really the definition of ra. And like a kise ra'ua is a three-legged chair that doesn't stand. Something that can't do what it's supposed to do because it's incomplete is really the definition of ra. It can't reach its destination. It can't achieve its tachlis. That's ra. A ladder that's unbalanced is a sulam, also ra'ua, can't do what it's supposed to do. So ra minu rav, they can't ever achieve anything because they remain childlike all their life, thinking it's all about me. And so they're supposed to get past that. So what did Hashem do to counteract that? Made the lifespan shorter, made us more vulnerable, made us more needy, helpless, to counteract that. That's a good point. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful week. You're welcome. Keser, Malchus, Malchus, Nitzchius, Nitzchius.
Well, like our prayer likes to say, but Matan Torah, and Hashem took
That's right. I did not say it, but I had it in my notes, but good.
There you go.
Very good.
Thank you so much. I enjoy this path.
Thank you. What's your name?
Phyllis Reese.
Phyllis
Reese.
Nice to meet you. You're,
you know my daughter's
son? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sarah's mother. I really, really love it.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
I'm in the car. Oh, for 2 seconds. I heard so much about you. I wanted to know about why last week you answered a question about why I'm a girl.
A girl is considered more, anything that is potential for more giving of life. I guess when the loss of it, it's not an answer that I'm fully satisfied. Because you can answer that, you know, that an answer is more important, the more the loss of life. But the woman really is the one that creates life. So the more potential for the loss, there's more associated with the witness, life that, you know, the loss of life. This is a thing
I went to Zest on my resume and I said that, and they're like, no, I didn't.
So where have you worked before?
I worked at Devonport, and I clicked for Judge Beck.
Okay, so
my husband, and I don't know, what did you have to do?
My husband was a senior partner of Lena Boss, which I've never followed in the news.
No way. I got the Cali's next.
Okay, I have to look at it. Wow.
So it wasn't
Lower
something that I was
so
like, so, you know.
All right, so go look online in the Wall Street Journal New York Times and see what the heck happened to Lena Boss.
I can't believe
a
it.
New manager.
Dewey LaBoss is gone?
It's a 100-year-old law firm. Dewey LaBoss is a 100-year-old law firm with 1,000
employees. We had them in front of us so many times. We had to
merge with LaBoss. The merger with LaBoss and this manager mismanaged the firm and drove this firm to the ground.
They have amazing
to the ground. It doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. Thousands
of
people out of work.
Do you know how many people I know from there?
Tons of mismanagement, but do you know what the real problem was? All the mistakes that were made along the way, the miscalculations in the management, so there was somebody hired to oversee that until the CFO, right? Well, this guy is having an affair with the CFO.
No! Oh my gosh!
Therefore, there's no oversight, and therefore...
Wait, isn't this like the overview of New York? Like gay marriage,
the biggest disaster in law firm history.
It's a disgrace of all disgraces.
That is
Dewey LaBoff.